The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are now entering the Second Fit Comics podcast, starring Mark Clare and Renzo Martinez.
When I say Deathlok the Demolisher, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
Why?
Why not?
I mean, why? I don't know what the hell this guy is. Is he an android? Is he an android? Yeah, I said android, right? Is he a zombie? Is he a person? What the hell is this guy, and why are we even talking about him?
You sound like you have a problem with my choices.
I just, you know, sometimes you pick a book and I'm like, really? You went to college, you graduated, you're an avid comic book collector and just all things dealing with comics, and we're gonna talk about this? I'm like, what is that?
I have a funny, very relevant, unironic example. I went to go pick up graphic novels today, and for a subtle plug, go ahead and subscribe at $25 or more, and I will go ahead and handpick a hardcover graphic novel to send to you, patreon.com/secondprintpod. Anyway, I was picking up good shit for people that pay good money, and I haven't actually bought myself a comic book since last October, because times be what they are. So I went ahead and I've really been wanting to read a good old fashioned Superman book, but I don't really want to jump into any of the current stuff because I know a little bit of what's happening with Superman. He was on Warworld for a while and now he's back, and you know, his identity is back to being secret. So I know that like they tried to do a general reset for people, but a lot of stuff has happened since I was last collecting Action Comics at the end of the Brian Michael Bendis run. And then I was not happy with the Tom Taylor Son of Kal-El because it was just 12 issues of, you know, 12 or something issues of Jonathan Kent telling me I was evil because I use single use water bottles. So I wanted to find something that was accessible. And luckily there were three Superman miniseries that were currently out. One was a three issue series, which was rather pricey. These were the larger, I don't think it was DC Black Label, but these were larger printed books that were about $10 each, called Superman Space Age, which was supposed to be an Elseworlds tale that takes place in an alternate Earth in the 1960s. It was supposed to coincide with like the space race and the JFK assassination. So that was pretty interesting.
Okay.
Finished that this afternoon. And I also got Superman Lost by Greg Priest, which I think the verdict is still out there. It's going to be a 10 episode. I'm sorry. It's going to be a 10. Oh, I'm doing what Mark does. Episodes, issues. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a 10 issue series about Superman being trapped in a parallel world for 25 years. So at its face, these are both standalone stories that you don't need to have a lot of context on in order to understand. However, they themselves are knockoffs. And not to be spoilery, but Superman Space Age is basically a cheapened version of Justice League New Frontier, which is a fantastic graphic novel and miniseries from the 90s. The animated film is fantastic. One of the best things that I think DC animation has put out in a long time.
That one's great. I have that. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. So, I mean, Superman Space Age is almost mocking sounds bad, but they almost take it and they almost just change things so that it's not that, but it kind of is. And I, you know, at the end of it, I'm just like, you know, this is not as I kept comparing it to that. And when I looked at what they did, I'm like, you know, this is just very unoriginal. So I would not recommend getting Superman Space Age. I mean, there was nothing really unique about the story. It had some nice artwork, but I, you know, $30, I didn't feel like I really got my money's worth. Superman Lost, this idea that Superman has been trapped in another world for like 20 something years. There have been Justice League cartoons about that. There have been Superman comics about that from Action Comics from way yonder back. There was also, you know, I feel like DC is starting to copy from the copies. Omni-Man from Invincible got lost in an alien dimension for like 20 years. And, you know, that was with Invincible Volume 1. And for Superman to basically be taking something from a copy, that itself just isn't interesting. So all this to basically say, what I miss about reading comics is reading something just sometimes just ridiculous. Like, it's not intended to be ridiculous. It was intended to be serious, but it comes out as ridiculous. Third, if you're going to copy something fucking cool and just double down on all the weird things about it. And three, I want a comic that makes me go, what are they doing? Like, why did they do this? And, you know, it's that random excitement that comes from, well, I could do this better. Well, how could this happen? Or what else are they going to try and do with this? I don't get that from modern comics anymore. And I haven't gotten that for a while. So as I go through my handy dandy Marvel Unlimited app, I go through it. And sometimes I just find absolutely random shit. And I wanted to go ahead and talk about the origins of Deathlok, which is going to be our topic today. Astonishing Tales, issue 25, the first appearance. Actually, I don't know if this was the first appearance. It's a little debated. But for all intents and purposes, this is the origin of Deathlok the Demolisher. I first learned about Deathlok in, I think it was issue 26 or 27 of New Avengers from the Brian Michael Bendis days. And here's how Deathlok was used. Deathlok was in a freaking like cryo chamber. He was just being like transported from place to place because his body was sold on the black market. And this bad guy named the Hood wanted to go fight another bunch of bad guys for turf because the Kingpin was in jail. So instead of fighting them himself, he basically activates Deathlok to not only go kill everyone, but also act as like a suicide bomber. So at the end of it, he would just explode. So here it is. You think you're going to go ahead and have this guy whose name is freaking Deathlok, who looks scary as shit, who's going to fight the new Avengers. No, he's basically just used as cannon fodder to go kill some C-list villains, and then he blows up. And I just remember thinking, like, damn, there's got to be more to this guy. So I've always had kind of a soft spot for Deathlok because I'm like, you know what? There should be more with this guy. Somebody should do more with him. Now, years later, they would bring in Deathlok to have a pretty significant role in the first couple seasons of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. on ABC.
Right.
He basically kind of kept the same origin in many respects. And then in 2014, 2015, they actually had a Deathlok series, which was actually not that bad. But
I didn't know about that one.
Yeah, it wasn't that bad. I'm actually surprised they canceled it. But the thing is, like, Deathlok is in this weird area of he is a conglomeration of a bunch of different characters. He is the Terminator. He is, you know, Jean-Claude Van Damme's Universal Soldier. He is Deathstroke. You basically take all these things and you have Deathlok in terms of powers, abilities, origins, and themes. So for that, it's really kind of hard for a character like him to stand on its own.
Yeah. And he's very much, I mean, they even, as I was reading the comic, they even mentioned it. They call him Frankenstein's monster, and the way they put the brain into the body and everything like that. I was like, yep, that's exactly how they did it in that Mary Shelley's. So I saw some of the parallels to that. I don't want to get into the comic right this second, but I'll tell you, like, the first three or four pages of this book, it's pretty badass. I was like, what? I really wasn't thinking it was going to be that kind of it's pretty graphic.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, this is pretty strong. I agree with your comparisons with Universal Soldier and Terminator and all the other things. It's just, for me, I've always seen him throughout the years, even from the late 80s, mid 80s to the early 90s and everything. And I just didn't know what to do or say to put my finger on this guy. He was like very much I don't know if even novelties are really right where he's very obscure.
He was a place filler.
You know, and then I kind of like equate him to like Death's Head. I mean, for all you Death Heads people out there, it's kind of like in the same, it's not the same, but it's kind of like in the same in which the character is there, has been there for a while, has had titles and everything, yet really what have they done? Now, I was looking through the app and everything, and I've noticed all the recent work in which he's featured in. So with that, it just shows you that I haven't read or kept up with as much as I'd like to. But I was actually pleasantly surprised that he's been involved in some aspect, a lot of titles, you know, in the last, I don't know, 10, 15 years.
Yeah. And I mean, he's there to be of service to the story. I mean, very rarely. And there have been a couple different people who have been Deathstroke. I think what I can say is that in the last Deathstroke ongoing series, it's not the guy that we're reading about here.
No,
I don't remember his name, but it's not the guy we're reading about here. That guy had a story which was almost completely pulled out of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. around the time that Disney is basically taking everything from the movies and trying to copy and paste them into the books. So it was one of those situations where it's like when you see Deathlok, he's kind of just there. But, you know, what I appreciate about this character is that this is coming at a time in the 70s where Marvel is actually pivoting from just like your generic Fantastic Four family friendly stuff. And now they're going to start covering more violent works. This is around the era that the Punisher is going to be introduced. Now, we talked a little bit about the Punisher on a recent episode in which I said with the introduction of the Punisher marks an era in which he's introduced and then kind of abandoned and then brought back later at a time where they want more violent characters. We're talking about Amazing Spider-Man discussing the issue of drugs and stuff like that. So this is an era in which, you know, comic books forever were constrained by the Comics Code Authority for the little rectangle thing, basically saying that parents, you know, liability's on you and shit. But, you know, they also went so far away from the graphic violence that now they're actually starting to lean into a little bit more. I also mentioned in our recent episode that you were also starting to see this with X-Men around the time with Uncanny X-Men. Uncanny X-Men is becoming increasingly violent through the artwork and through the stories and through the murder of characters and things like that. So I think Deathlok served a purpose in which, one, they needed an original character because you can't have Spider-Man like snapping necks and stuff like that, or Ben Grimm like, you know, collapsing skulls like grapes. But you also need somebody who is accessible to a kid going to go see an ultra-violent sci-fi B-rated movie. And I think Deathlok kind of checks off all those marks. You're muted.
Sorry. I agree. When you break it down the way you just did and everything, it makes total sense. And he... You know, I really hope that going forward that people get to see him in a different light and everything. People get to see, not different light, but just there's more awareness of it, because he's actually a pretty cool character. It's just that sometimes, depending on who's writing him and what's going on, the way that he is, whether he's, you know, a hitman or anything like that, or an assassin, or whether he is, you know, kind of used like cyborg and connecting to everything, like a Unimind type technology type thing. or whatever, just the ways that they're, that he's written, it doesn't really flow. And that happens in comics and all characters, but this one is like kind of, I feel like it's really different from one to the other. So if we just keep it, you know, if we just keep it like the original version, he is a badass assassin. And, you know, I think that will definitely work a lot better. Just like, you know, just like the Punisher. I don't even know what's going on with Punisher. Don't even get me going with that.
He's a ninja warlord now, apparently, who doesn't use guns.
He's got the god of hand or something. I don't even know. The hand, I don't know.
I gave up. Well, anyway, let's go ahead and actually jump into Astonishing Tales, issue 25. This is the origin of Deathlok the Demolisher. And I usually don't like to spend too much time on the covers, but there's a lot going on with this cover. First off, I love like the RoboCop introduction where he's just kind of like bursting through the page. You know, he's very much like Frankenstein's monster, like, you know, pulling himself off the table. You have the terrified scientist and everything. But here's the weird thing about it. One, in the preview box, it's like, is he man, machine, or monster?
Monster.
You can't tell. What is it? You can't know till you read our fearsome first issue. One, why would you? And this isn't Marvel back when they would actually change a title character mid-series for another character.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know why they're saying that this is a first issue. I know they're doing a marketing thing because what they're trying to say is Deathlok is going to be taking over this title. But it's like, if you believe in it that much, why not just go ahead and give him his own book? Why is it Astonishing Tales featuring Deathlok the Demolisher, especially since Deathlok the Demolisher takes up almost a third of the cover section right there? So that's really big.
Yeah.
The second thing is like, here you have this guy who looks fucking horrifying. He does not scream superhero. He screams like, you know, crazy villain.
I think I know what you're going to say.
Yeah. The steel smashing origin of the world's most offbeat superhero. What? Who wrote that off? Who actually wrote that and then signed off on that? That is just, that is really counterintuitive. And then to make things even more confusing, this is like The Rock's hierarchy of power change at DC. You just market it and then it just dies. Okay.
Okay.
Perhaps the greatest creation yet in Marvel Age of Comics Phase 2. One, greatest creation is really something that somebody really should have thought about for more than a couple seconds. Secondly, I have been collecting, researching, understanding the history of publishing across all the major brands and spending too much time on shit that doesn't fulfill me in life. But I have never heard of Marvel Phase 2.
Yeah, I don't know what that's about.
I Googled this, and apparently it was a soft attempt to launch new characters and stuff that basically never succeeded. So they have a lot of money writing on Deathlok. This is almost like
they did.
This is almost like Marvel when they started doing movies, thinking, you know what would really benefit us? Howard the Duck. This must have been from the same brain trust that did that.
Yeah, it must have been. Really how this is it's written and everything. You know, really, what does it say again? Perhaps the greatest creation yet. You have Spider-Man, Hulk, Thor, the Avengers, and X-Men, but maybe this is the greatest creation yet.
I will defend Deathlok in many ways. I will never defend this description.
No. This is a little bit too much. Gone a little bit too far.
Yeah, this is almost like they should market themselves like Arby's. It's like, are they good sandwiches? It's like, no, they have the meats. Or Little Caesars. It's like, are they great pizzas? It's like they're $5. Well, they were $5. Rest in peace, discounts. But they, you know, it's like they're not the greatest pizzas. They're hot and they're ready.
You don't need to
undersell. You just need to state what it is and leave it on the table. This would be a great cover if they just took off all of that.
Yeah,
I think that also states how little confidence they actually had in this comic.
Yeah, they were really trying to sell the hell out of this thing. And but you know what? This is a generational thing also, because in the 70s, there was always a lot of like little introductions or little thing, this and that. He's man, he's this, he's not, he's actually that. You know, it's always some shit like that going around. Yet in this example, this is batshit crazy. This is, come on, guys. Come on.
Yeah.
And I got to talk about his uniform. Whenever we get a little further on, I just need to ask one pertinent question.
Well, let's go ahead and jump into that with the first page, because they leave very little to work with here. You turn the first page and you get Stanley presents Deathlok the Demolisher. And basically what we get, and I like how they kind of used to do intro pages and stuff, we get a full standing illustration of Deathlok basically holding out his laser revolver. And the story is A Cold Night's Frenzy. And basically what he's doing is he's going to hunt down some dude, basically, and he's going to go kill him. And what we're basically getting is a whole ton of exposition about, you know, how he's just blindly efficient and how he always gets his man and everything. I mean, he's RoboCop. He's basically he's RoboCop. I'm not even going to bother reading this. It's like he's basically RoboCop. Yeah. But, I don't know what was with Marvel, and like, it's not even like a strongman onesie. It's almost just like they went through this period where it's like all the dudes were also wearing bathing suits. Now, if you're going to make someone wear a bathing suit, I mean, this really makes it look like Deathlok had his junk removed too. I defend a lot of comic illustrations where it's like, oh, it's just paint on bodies, but it's like, you know, in a way, it's like he is badass, but this is not the most badass costume I would have given some guy I'm calling the Demolisher. He looks more WWE at this point.
Yeah, he's got like a leotard on, basically. He's got a leotard on with the belt and hot red shoes, hot red boots.
Well, he's got a knife on the side. I mean, he looks like a G.I. Joe reject to a degree.
Yeah, he looks.
I'm not
like,
saying
like,
that in an insulting way. I mean, he looks like an action figure.
He looks like a broke Snake Eyes. Yeah, Snake Eyes had to put shit together. It doesn't match. Whatever. That's what
paint him black.
Like. I'll tell you what though. Like, again, when I saw this page, this is a pretty cool spread. This is a pretty cool first page to open it up. You know, and the guy is, you know, he's double. Is he double fist? Well, let me retract that. Is he holding the pistol with two hands?
Oh my god!
And pointing
gosh,
it forward, like he's like for real.
Yeah, he actually like is aiming and everything. And I mean,
yeah,
I always like. I think maybe they explain it later. I was always a bit confused why the gun has a cable going through it that attaches to his belt. I think they explain it in a little bit, but yeah,
yeah, that always got me, the cable. I never really. The cord. I didn't really.
So that way,
why.
When they license the toy rights and kids complain about losing the guns, they could be like, "No, this one has a string attached."
It's a string attached.
I mean, that's like. I mean, I don't say this in like an insulting way. This looks like a big toy opportunity, but I don't think parents in the 70s were gonna buy a toy called Deathlok the Demolisher who looks like an androgynous cyborg assassin for their kids.
Androgynous.
I mean, I don't think that's a unitard. They need to like scroll him around to a 180. I want to see how much cheek is out there because he's like he's one wedgie away from being a UFC ring girl.
Yeah, no, I mean, it looks, yeah, the outfit is not great. But my thing is I've never heard him combined with the Demolisher afterward. I don't think that was ever a thing or something that I paid attention to.
At one point, they try calling him Deathlok the Terminator, but then that basically gets pulled out. Yeah. But then later, Deathstroke becomes Deathstroke the Terminator.
Huh.
And then it just gets weirder because then you have like the real Terminator, which is out during both. So it's kind of like, guys, you can't really run off that anymore. Sorry.
It's not
as bad as like, you know, the whole Captain Marvel confusion and shit. It's not like that. But anyway, so Deathlok is chasing this guy, and he's just like, you know, scary as shit. He's chasing him, and his target is running. And in six panels, you see this guy. And this is what I like about the '70s. The '70s gets really creative with their panel layout. And I think that's what I really enjoyed about this. So you have the sequence in which this guy is basically running, he's tripping and he's screaming like, please God, no, don't hurt me. And you see Deathlok coming around a corner. He grabs a steel I-beam and you can see like part, like one of his arms is like completely robotic. And as he grabs onto this I-beam, he actually puts a dent in it. So like, it's a very subtle feature, but it's one of those moments where it's like, shit, like this guy is fucking strong. And then he's shooting the dude and he shoots him in the back. And, you know, it's just very quiet. He hasn't said anything. I mean, usually they would have a different type of origin or they would go ahead and have him speaking. So you get more of a personality. We're going on for several more pages. And you see this guy, he's running through a rough part of town. He almost gets roughed up, but he's not afraid of these hooligans, you know, pulling out a knife on him. Like, you're on the wrong side of town. He's like, fuck you. That guy has a robot arm. I am leaving. So he's like running and running and running. You know, then, you know, he gets to the last panel in which you just see him run up to the barrel of a gun. And all you see is the barrel of it. And he runs, you know, he runs head onto it, and he's just like, oh, shit. Yeah. And before you know it, Deathlok just basically grabs the guy and he's crying and screaming. And it's really excruciating because they even zoom in on his eyes. He's just got tears running down his face. He's like, I beg of you. And Deathlok is just like, yes, fire. So he puts the gun to the guy's chest and just starts like blasting him. And this is what's wild because this scene almost reminded me a little bit of the end of Blade Runner.
Okay.
Where the guy gives the speech about like, you know, are we birds in the wind? Do we have a purpose? All that type of shit. But instead, the guy is his chest is like, this is wild. His chest is just cratered and there's steam coming out of it. but he still has to go ahead and put out this little, you know, Blade Runner soliloquy. He's like, your voice, you're not human. You're a robot, an android, a cyborg with no feelings. No remorse, just an inhuman machine. I pity you. And I gotta say, I'm focusing on the giant crater in his chest with the smoke coming out. I think I don't think he'd be saying anything. But, yeah. I mean, I just kind of like it because as he's talking, as the guy is growing bluer, showing that he's, you know, he's growing colder. You see Deathlok just running away, and he's hunched, and he's not replying. And you know, it does kind of state, you know, kind of what we're working with. So I got to say, for an introduction in the first three pages, I am very impressed.
Very impressed. I mean, like you said, the paneling is really cool, especially on this last one that we just talked about. There's like, if you guys watch this, there's like three panels right in the middle of like Deathlok getting closer and closer to the guy's face. And it goes from a small panel to a medium panel to a large panel. And the large panel is where you see the guy's eyes and he's crying. And that, I mean, it's just really well done. He really is. He's a badass. Like the very first couple of pages that we talked about. I mean, it pans in from his eye, but then in his eye, there's like a shadow of the guy he's chasing. So back up to half of his face, and then to his torso up, and then you actually kind of see what he looks like. And then there's some paneling in the middle that's just really great with like the guy falling down. And it's like seven individual panels that go across from left to right. This is a good book. The first three pages, I'm like, damn, I wish I would have known about this earlier, because the way it's constructed as a comic and the way that you can follow as a reader is great. And then a lot of the stuff that's in here, it's really cool. Great, well, you're going to have 70s talk and you're going to have your cliches on here. And if I'm not mistaken, isn't he like arguing with his operating system through this whole time?
Part of it.
Yeah, right?
Part of it, yeah.
So so it's kind of like Knight Rider also. He's, you know, fucking around with Kit. Kit's not listening to what Michael Knight is saying. So it's real. Up until that point, I'm like, man, this is a solid book.
Yeah. And I mean, for the next section, they just jump into it. They don't, while they definitely are good of how they pace stuff, it's a pretty fast-paced book, and there's very little exposition, which is what I like, because I think a good comic is show, don't tell.
Yeah.
And this really does do it. So when you take away all the corniness that we kind of just threw out as a disclaimer at the beginning, like, what I like about it is like they don't. This is not Adam. No, actually, let me rephrase that. This is almost like Adam West doing Batman. Adam West never intended for it to be a comedy. He always said, and he said this to Burt Ward and everyone who ever did the show with him, he's like, don't think of this as a comedy. Don't treat this as a satire. Treat this completely seriously. And even though it came out as such, you know, when it's done right, it's done right. And I think these first three pages, I mean, it certainly caught my attention because I was going through this. I'm like, oh, it's going to be a lot of exposition. It's going to be a cheesy sci-fi film on paper. No, they've done very well. And for the next section, we basically get a flashback sequence. And when we hear somebody saying, a pity, we failed. The patient's dead for all intents and purposes. And then we just have this, like, you know, J.K. Simmons type of guy come in. He's like, but you have isolated the portion of his brain and kept it alive as ordered. And he's like, yeah, well, I mean, what was I going to say, sir? Like, I wasn't going to do. And this is where we're introduced to a guy named Riker. Riker is, I would say, your Thaddeus Ross. He's your Colonel Lane. He's your token evil army guy who's working in special ops and crazy shit, who's always, like, you know, a bad day away from trying to overthrow the government of Brazil or something. So, you know, basically what we hear is that this guy, Colonel Manning, was the most brilliant military strategist alive. And what he wants to do is he wants to preserve his knowledge for a military experiment. And this surgeon is just like, yeah, I mean, we could preserve it like a frozen vegetable. But Riker, I want you to know, you've initiated the most ghoulish surgical procedure since Frankenstein. And the guy is just like, oh, I'm totally aware of it, mister. There's been a war.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
War going on since 1983, and it's just like, what war are you like are you like fighting the Contra right now? Like, what's going on, man? And he's just like trying to justify it. He's like, Manning was so aware of it that he got half his face and all of his right arm blown off by a cushion bomb. And he just goes on screaming more, and he's like, if we're going to win this war, we need soldiers who won't get splattered all over the battlefield. We need. Sorry, I just. Goddamn.
It's great.
Yeah.
I mean, who does?
He would be a great salesman for Raytheon and Northrop Grumman. We need super soldiers, men with bodies of steel and minds of computer precision, men who function with the infallibilities and fearlessness of machines. So if you've got any complaints about working of Project Alpha Mech, Doctor, I suggest you bring them up at your court-martial. It's like, God damn. So if this is like in the 80s, my God, this is like a Dick Cheney wet dream. I mean, I can imagine this going past Reagan's desk, and he's like, well, I'm not against raising the dead because I am a good Christian, but we can't take money from the Iranians to give to our good friends, Noriega, and then expect our soldiers to just get splattered all over the place. I mean, what are we, uncivilized? Go ahead and go with Project Alpha Mech. It's as strong as Project Star Wars. So, yeah, I dig this. I'm totally down with this. This is the context. So we
continue. I mean, it is what it is, right?
This is your token. This is your token. It's a military experiment gone wrong or gone right type of deal from the 80s. I mean, just lay it thick. That's the exposition I need. That's the exposition I need.
I mean, shit. Go hard. For real.
You see, President Gorbachev, we have a deathlock. And do you know you have starvation? Checkmate, bitch. We go on, and what we see is that the scientists, and I can only equate this to like, the way they make it look in the surgical room and everything. I mean, this is like Dark Inspector Gadget what was it? Lee Majors on crack as he's becoming the bionic man.
Right.
They're basically like, stitching this guy together, and they're just like, oh man, this is kind of weird. And they're talking in all this surgical talk, and they're like, man, this guy has like glass in him, and he's half robot, and it's just like, is Riker just gonna watch us do this? I mean, I like my box watching me do shit, nonetheless put together a dead body I'm about to weaponize for democracy. But they go ahead and put him together, and then lastly they pull out Manning's brain and they stick it in the body. And then, one of my favorite things is they're like, damn, like there's still some taxpayers who wouldn't like the idea of the military spending its time making monsters. This is not allegory. This is like a straight up. This is a straight up criticism of the military industrial complex. Yes, I think there are more than some who would be upset with us raising the dead to turn them into like freaking assassins and stuff.
Oh my god.
And then you have this other guy. They're like, who designed the prosthetic arm anyway? And they're just like, top secret, but supposed to have the tensile strength of forged steel. And it's like, yeah, that's why they made it look as menacing as possible. And they put the brain in, and next thing you know, he just starts like coming alive. And it's really, I actually think how they did this is really interesting, because they show enough of him so that it's the same deathlock you saw before. But this is when you really start to be like, you sort of look at this and you're like, oh my gosh, like he's a human and he's coming back. And this is truly of Frankenstein proportions, because in the bottom panels of this page, you see the shadow starting to just disappear. And then as he opens his eyes, you've got the one like bulging, like, Uncle Ruckus eye. And then you have the eye of a human. And that's the first time I really notice it. It's like, yeah, he's a man distorted. He is a man. No more.
And again, I mean those panelings at the bottom, just really well done. Just like, it's kind of like the evolution, or like him coming into the light, really. And it looks really cool. I mean, it's really, again, this book, it's really well done. Now, why they're putting a prosthetic arm together with a little screwdriver and not like something more high tech like a drill or something? Okay, do you? And then the general or whatever just standing there pushing buttons on the wall.
Yeah, this works.
Overseeing everything. I mean, it really is. I can't say enough. I really dig this book. This is a treat. This is a treat for me. But the paneling and the art is actually pretty solid.
Yeah. Now, the next few pages I'm going to kind of gloss over. If we haven't figured it out by now, they're jumping between flashbacks and modern day. So modern day Deathlok is a hitman, and he has more cognizance about him. And then the flashbacks are going back to actually explaining his origin. So I like it this way. It's never just, straight bam, boom, bam. By the end of it, you kind of just have everything in a linear fashion. I like the contrast, because what it shows is that there's a lot in between to be explored, and it adds more depth and complexity to otherwise what would typically be a pretty simple character. But what we learn is that Deathlok is basically turned into a hitman. He's a mercenary for hire. He ends up getting into a fight with the guy that hired him, and he's just like, I'm kind of done with the shit. And the guy's just like, no, you work for me. And, I don't waste time with freak machines, and you know, Deathlok just kind of like, you know, smacks his hand like a child, and he's like, I don't have time to waste on punk thugs. So before he leaves, the guy tries to pull a gun on him, but he starts going around like, you know, killing people, because that's what he does when he gets into a disagreement. So then we get back into a flashback, and you know, we basically see him going through the equivalent of like his Rocky IV montage. He's just like learning how to like destroy and kill shit. And what we have is that who was it? Do they explain who the chick is?
I was gonna talk about that.
Yeah, can we talk about that? Because she kind of just comes in. So here you have like this top secret military facility, and you have this much younger woman wearing like, you know, barely a thigh high dress. And my first thought is like, oh, it's a prostitute. This must be an American base out of country. But you know, that's not. You just have her. You just have this random chick here, and he's like trying to, you know, turn her on by showing her his robot death zombie. So.
Look what's even creepier on this thing. Look at his face on it. That weird smile and everything that he has as he's, that's a, it's like, it's almost like he's turned on.
I want to know what he's doing with the other dead bodies that they obviously put it on. All right, everyone, leave the room. I'm doing this for freedom.
America.
So yeah, he's just like, you know, this guy demolishes the seal girder effortlessly. Yes. His artificial arm is more than adequate. And then the chick is like, but he's so repulsive. Just looking at him makes my flesh crawl. Do I have to watch this demonstration with you, Simon? And he's just like, I should think you'd want to share this moment with me, Nina. It's my finest. It's the finest of my life. A dream sculpted into glory. It isn't every major who can dupe the entire military into funding his private obsession. Listen. All right, Doc, give us the rundown on him. And this is where we have like the long ass exposition. Now, I will actually go ahead and read this, because what's funny, and Marvel doesn't do this anymore, they have like a split panel. All I can explain it as a really fancy Instagram grid where multiple things go ahead and form one image for the Zoomers out there. Okay. And they actually have like little arrows pointing to like parts of his face. So. Mm-hmm. It goes ahead and they start saying, very well, Major Riker, as you know, Project Alpha Mech involves the technological improvement of man by retaining a shred of Colonel Luther Manning's consciousness, specifically that portion of his brain governing strategic allocations. We've been able to establish a basis for the integration of miniaturized relay circuits. These circuits are protected by steel plate implants in the skull and control motions and other functions such as mnemonic lens, which substitutes for Manning's destroyed eye. So much of Manning's face was destroyed, in fact, that we had to virtually reconstruct it with metal and replace the pulverized bone. And basically, like, he's fucked. So he's RoboCop. And I think I read that all out of order. But yeah, he's RoboCop. They're just like, look, he has an antenna there, and at one point they're just pointing to his face. They're like, that's metal. And I'm like, thanks for explaining, because I had no clue what the fuck that was. And as he's continuing through his Rocky IV montage where he's doing pole vaults and stuff, I mean, they're just having a fun talking about how easy it is for him to kill people. And you know, they give him a knife and stuff, and they still don't explain why his laser pistol has a fucking rope to it. But this general is just like really trying to, I think she's a hooker. I think he actually want, I think she's a hooker. She's giving the hooker.
She bites. Has to be. Cause look how short that dress is.
Yeah.
In this panel, you could really see him like, oh girl.
Yeah. It's like, this is not, you know, visit dad at work or visit your husband at work
at all. Why are you in a super secret military institution?
Yeah, nothing about this makes right. Nothing about this seems right. So anyway, now we zoom back to the present, and he's just murdering people. And I mean, what's crazy about this is he throws a knife at somebody like fucking John Wick. And it just like he hits him so hard, it blasts another crater through this guy's back.
Yep.
Like this is like Rambo shit.
Like, yeah, you would have like, figured that he had shot him with a shotgun or something, the way this hole is. But no, it's a knife. It's a nice looking knife. But it rips this guy's like like there's like you said, there's a extremely large hole going out the back of this guy.
Yeah, and like they this is totally not getting approved by the Comics Code Authority, even no. though we're still around at that point. Which I denied. Love. Yeah. But anyway, so they basically go back to another flashback. And what they show is that, you know, they constantly had to try and like mess with his brain and everything. It gives off a lot of Bloodshot vibes. Yeah. I mean, of them trying to like, you know, mess with his memory and everything. And right, trying to talk about, you know, how much of his humanity can he maintain. So it's a long, long section of a lot of exposition from the scientists and Riker. But basically, much like Bloodshot, Manning just like loses his shit and decides to start killing all the scientists, almost like Wolverine Weapon X. So he's just like freaking murdering people. He's kicking down doors. And eventually we go back to the modern story in which he finds the criminal kingpin that's refused to you know, pay him for his shit. And he's just like, nothing's got to stop me. Not even 9 inches of solid steel. When it stands between me and $100,000, man, that must've been 1970s money where $100,000 is a lot. But he's like, I'd still take that, but no, I wouldn't like go around. I wouldn't go to war with another gang for $100,000. Like, let's add That's the true. Context. Like, you know, $100,000 is a lot. $100,000 to go kill a bunch of people and start like, you know, putting a cartel hit on my head is not worth it.
No, it's not worth it.
So he goes to this guy and he's just like, here, I offer, and there's some 70s talks. He's like, all right, Biggs, I offered your 2 pigeons. Where's my money? And the guy is like, money? What does a machine need money for? And Deathlok is like, let's just say I'm tired of being a machine. And the guy's like, well, I got news for you, Tin Man. There ain't no money. Thanks for doing the job. I don't fucking know. What's is it Grazie? Gratis? Is he speaking
Italian? Gratis. Thanks for doing the job, Gratis. Free. Oh. Thanks for doing the job for free, yeah.
Oh, well, that explains everything now. See, folks, comics are educational. So, speaking of educational, Deathlok takes this motherfucker to school, jumps on him like a boss, and now he's just fucking wailing on him. And in his mind, this is where we actually start to get some inner dialogue from Deathstroke. He's like, shut up, shut up, shut up. And he's just like beating this dude. But what you begin to see is that he starts looking at him and like his flesh is tearing off, not Deathlok's, the guy he's been fighting. And what he begins to realize is he's not human. He's a cyborg, a rotten, lousy, stinking cyborg. And maybe that makes you feel violence is useless on him, huh? But me, that makes me want to rip him to shreds. So he starts actually like tearing this guy apart. And what you begin to realize is that, you know, some time has gone by and this was all part of some plot by Riker to find a way to get Deathlok back involved with whatever crazy bullshit he's doing. And at this point, what you realize is that Riker was that crime boss and Deathlok has pretty much figured it out. And he's like, most impressive display, Deathlok. And Deathlok's like, that's your voice, Riker. Then you were behind the cyborg. And Riker's like, yes. And now that you've killed him, the two men who were out to stop Project Alpha Mech, I'll be creating many more cyborgs. Then they'll be laying for you, Deathlok. They'll be lurking in every alley, hiding, following you, hounding you. All of them indistinguishable from human beings. You shouldn't have let your plan slip, Deathlok. Because now I'll never rest until I've stopped your intended brain transplant. So basically, what he's trying to do is he's trying to take his brain. This is what I found out later. He's trying to take his brain and put it into a clone body of his. So at this point, you know, Riker's just like, we can't have that shit. The few taxpayers who are okay with us bringing the dead back to life to turn them into Universal Soldier don't want them to actually obtain any humanity again. So what ends up happening is the prostitute comes back and she's like, Simon, are you? And she's like, oh my God, that's not a regular Zoom call. She looks behind him. And he has like the back of his head exposed, and you just see a fucking microchip and gears.
Yeah, it's like a circuit breaker back there.
That's some old Macintosh shit right there. And she's just like, oh my God, Simon, you were a cyborg. And he's like, an obvious deduction, my dear Nina. And also your last. Yeah, she's totally a hooker because she's about to end up in the back of a car.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
yeah. Yeah. And that's.
And her wardrobe hasn't changed much from her first appearance on your email.
No, that's what she wears on Thursdays. you know, every work has a uniform. So that's the end of it. That's 15 pages of us getting a pretty succinct story. But the thing is, it's like, what I like about it is if I were to say it linearly, it's super simple, unoriginal, almost bland. If writers and artists can make a simple story and how they structure it with their page layout by having the two parallel stories that eventually converge at the end and with their artwork, make it look more interesting. That's how you know they've actually done something really creative. So Deathlock corny? Yeah. Is the story pretty basic? Yeah. But it's a lot of freaking action you get for this book. The way that everything is done looks beautiful. I'm really happy with how they were able to structure the story. And three, it's just a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, so, I totally agree, man. I recommend this book. Like, if you guys just want to have a good time just reading something quickly, this is exactly it. I love the fact that whenever they tell Deathlock that he's ugly or something like that, he immediately pummels him. Immediately pummels him. It's so great. It's like, you ugly, stinking robot.
now I have an excuse.
Now you're done. And it's really great. Listen, again, the paneling on this last page, when he's like tearing this damn cyborg apart, you have to look at it for like, I don't know, a couple of times. Because for me, I thought it was a guy. I'm like, damn, he's really destroying this guy. And then I look closely. I'm like, oh, these are parts flying all over the place. It's not the best artwork I've ever seen, but the paneling and how the story is told and how the damage is inflicted. That's the really cool part, how the damage is inflicted from panel to panel. It's great work.
Yeah, and I didn't expect Colonel Jeffrey Dahmer to be a cyborg either. So when I saw that happen, I was like, damn, this is a big-ass conspiracy.
Oh, my God.
I can only imagine Reagan figuring out, well, we can't get taxpayers knowing that we have a bunch of half-human, half-robots in the federal government. That just won't fly.
You figure that that you know, in all of these instances, there is a. Oh, my dog is making noise. Maui, enough. Sorry, everybody. It's gonna keep going. I'm gonna walk and talk.
She wants to know if Nina was the prostitute too.
So, you know, it just works well, you know, in every government agency or in any kind of anything. You know, there's a hooker somewhere around earning her keep, you know. So, and she's vastly younger than Riker. Like, Riker looks like he's got liver spots. I mean, it's really bad. So,
yeah.
But
so
it works.
Yeah.
It works.
Let's go ahead and jump into ratings.
Okay.
I'll take this one first. The artwork is very classic 70s. What I do appreciate is the fact that they don't hold back the violence, and I think that's the biggest thing. It's dated in terms of, like, you know, the charts section where they have to point out, like, that's metal, that's a bolt, like stuff like that. Like, you can still tell it's very old, but it's very thematic in how they lay it out. Like, it's almost like watching a movie in certain areas. So for that, I'm going to be really nice. I know if Mark were here, he would probably go a tick lower than me, but I'm actually, given the context and the era and everything, I'm going to give the artwork a 4. I'm going to give the artwork a 4. It's very much written. I'm sorry. It's very much drawn in the Jack Kirby style, which I appreciate. It's not exactly the same, but especially that first giant illustration, it's very much the Marvel way of how they used to draw characters consistently. So for that, I will give it a 4. For the story, I think this is only generous because of how it was laid out between jumping back and forth between the flashbacks and the modern era. I think in some areas there's to go from like no exposition to have an entire page where you're just having like 20 conversational, you know, word balloons popping out. That was a bit jarring towards the middle. I'm going to go ahead and actually give the story and everything a three. So I'm actually going to give this a 7 out of 10, which at the forefront, when I saw this, especially seeing that it was only 15 pages, I was like, this is not getting any higher than a 6. But I think a 7 actually kind of shows like there was a lot of potential with this. This is not written or drawn in the same way. And given the other comics from Marvel at the time, this is a departure because of the violence alone, because of that, because of the themes. Yeah, I mean, we could compare this to like the first issue of the Hulk. Evil military guy, experiment gone wrong. Is he man or monster? But, you know, you compare that to this. This could have very much just been a redux of the Incredible Hulk in many ways.
Okay.
But it wasn't. This could have just been another type of Wolverine, but it wasn't. So for that, it's like they were able to take something simple, but also just give it enough twist to actually seem fresh.
No, I agree. I mean, I think what I'll start with the art, okay, on my end. And I'll start with this just first real quick. Like if you're like a super comic book truist, and you're looking to be like blown away or something, I don't know if this is necessarily for you, but this is a 100% fun book. I mean, it's in a lot of the stuff that's detailed on here. You're going to have, ooh, like what the hell, like moments like that reading this in just 15 pages. Art, I give it 3.5. I have seen better art in this era and everything, in the 70s and everything. I have seen somewhat better. This is still, like I said, strong, and the paneling is really, really strong. So I think 3.5 is good. You guys go by decimals or no?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And for the story, I think I'll give the story 3.5 as well. I think the story, you know, it is kind of cliche and then things happen that way. But I agree with everything that you said. The way the paneling is done and then the violence that's involved in this book just makes it flow. It's very cinematic and just makes it go. And you're like, you get through it way quicker than you thought you were going to get through, even though it's only 15 pages. But I was thoroughly entertained with this. And I never in a million years thought that I would get that. So that's 7 for me, too.
Yeah, so this is a total 14 out of 20, which by Second Print Comic standards, this is a good Sunday read. Yeah. Now, I usually, like, sometimes I'll say this just to say if I like a series. Like, this is a series I will, you know, I would like to continue. I'm already a few issues ahead, so I have an understanding of, like, what's going to happen. But this is definitely something that I'm going to read through because,
okay.
I mean, it's just fun. It's just fun. And, you know, a story like this, a character like this reminds me of when I was younger, picking up a lot of stuff for the first time. And even though this is a book from like 50 years ago, this is pretty freaking fun.
Yeah. It's pretty fun. And, you know, reading this a second time around, going through it, I understand why in his uniform, he's got the United States flag on it in the beginning. Because I looked it over again one more time. And when he's the hitman, he doesn't have it. So I thought that
I didn't even notice it went missing. That's clever.
He's like murdering people with like from the United States.
Could you imagine him going into like Eastern Europe, going to go like bump up some mob bosses, and it's like, this is brought to you by America. That's almost more impersonal than drones. I feel like if you know you're about to get murdered, it should come with some blinking eyes and say it to you. I almost would rather have my death robots be actual zombies than drones at that point. You know, at least add a little bit of cinematic flair to the terror you inflict. But they go ahead, and there have been a couple different Deathlocks. The last Deathlok was a completely different character. There's somewhere, you know, in the future, he's like a freedom fighter. There was a Wolverine Weapon X series that came out. I have a complete run of it. It's just called Wolverine Weapon X. And the final, I think maybe it was like the second volume of it, you have a situation where somebody's actually created like hundreds of Deathloks, and they've sent them back in time to like hunt down Wolverine. And Bucky Barnes, Captain America. Yeah, it was so cool. I think it's just called like I think the arc was just called Deathlok or something like that. But that was just fucking cool because you have Wolverine and Captain America fighting like an army of Deathloks. And what they have to do, and this is what's wild, what they have to do is they have to go back in time and they have to kill certain individuals. So they literally steal the plot of the Terminator in which they have to go back and like kill people who are like members of the resistance leadership.
Right.
And the Wolverine has to stop it. So sometimes Deathlok is this character of Luther Manning. Other times Deathlok is just an alias that multiple people can take. Gotcha. And they still look the same, but I think that's what's cool with the character. He can be, I mean, it's kind of like the Crow. You can have multiple people be that character who have really nothing to do with each other, but they can all have very distinct stories. And sometimes they're just there to be like stormtroopers where you just blast them away and shit like that, and Wolverine is killing them. But yeah, I mean, I have a greater appreciation for Deathlok after this episode than I did before.
Yeah, me too. Like, opening the show, I was like, why are we doing this? And like, after having read this and gone through it, it's pretty cool, man. It's something like, I'd like to continue and see how it evolves from decade to decade and see how he's been used.
Well, I would definitely say that if you want to jump onto a next one, I would go with the Deathlok series that was last published in like 2014. I think it was under the all new, all different Marvel era. But this is probably the one where I was like, I wish they had kept it going before they canceled it. I think they canceled it prematurely. But also, this isn't to say he's a bad character, but some characters are better when they work in tandem with others. They're not always headliner heroes or headliner characters. And I think Deathlok, over time, he is definitely a better character when he has others to kind of work off of than when he's in his own title. And, that's not to say he's not a good character. It's just how is he used, who's writing him, and what is the story? I think that's what matters most. Whereas you can go ahead and come out with multiple Superman books, and they're going to sell, even if they're not always great. Well, that does it, folks. I hope you enjoyed this as much as we did. Remember, we go ahead and keep the fun going and more over at patreon.com/secondprintpod. You can go ahead and hear other stuff from Token Uncle Brody and I, such as the recent episode we did of Remzo versus DCEU, where we covered Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice. Last week, we went ahead and did another SBC Pop episode with Mark. We've got so much more coming to you every week. And if you want to go ahead and catch up on past episodes of the show, go ahead and hit us up at secondprintcomics.com. As always, if you forget all these awesome things I told you to do, remember, there's only one you need to actually memorize. Have it, tattooed on your chest like you're part of a gang or something. Name your child after this long section. It's Read Comics! Change the world. Good night, America.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend. And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.